Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, August 2nd, 2014. This is episode 1,105. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk tech. It's like talking turkey, only there's chips in it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. I shall repeat that in a moment, so I'll give you a moment to get a pencil if you'd like to make a call and talk about computers, sure, yeah. The internet, yeah, well, of course, everything's got the internet in it. It's the internet everywhere. We talk about smartphones a lot. That's really the computer of choice these days, isn't it, for a lot of people? And we talk about home theater. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, is joining us about half an hour from now. So all that stuff. And I guess we could throw in obsolete technologies like standalone GPS systems, camcorders, and MP3 players. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. That's the number. Toll free anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. Kim Schaffer on the phones today, filling in for Heather Hammond. Oh, let's see what's going on. Apple's acquisition of Beats. The thing I said would never happen happened. And it's done. The U.S. has given regulatory approval. Vivendi, which owns the Universal Music Group, one of the big music companies, sold off its portion to Apple at over $400 million. So now Apple spent more than $3.4 billion with a B dollars for this headphone company. And they've started to absorb it. I don't know what they're going to do with it. I guess we'll find out. Rumor now, September 16th, 6 weeks from Tuesday. 6 weeks from Tuesday will be the Apple iPhone 6 announcement. These are all very sketchy rumors, so don't hold me to this now. But if you're waiting for a new iPhone, I think that your wait is nearly over. We don't know much about it. 4.7 inches, that's a lot bigger. Well, it's 0.7 inches bigger. That's probably not a lot. But it's more to the size of a standard phone these days. And maybe some other cool stuff. We don't know. We don't really know. Maybe a watch, although some of the pundits say announced in October, available in December for the iWatch. There's some good news that it's legal now to unlock your phone. Legal, once again, to unlock your phone. I should probably make it clear there's three different things you can do to your phone. There's unlocking it. There's rooting it. And there's jailbreaking it. They're all three different things entirely. Let's start with jailbreaking. Because jailbreaking can only be done to an iPhone. And the only thing jailbreaking does is, it does one thing intentionally and one probably unintentionally. Intentionally, it allows you to buy stuff from somewhere besides Apple. Right now, with an iPhone, you can only buy it on the iTunes store, right? The App Store. But once you jailbreak your phone, you've released it free. I'm free at last. And you can buy stuff from other places, none of which probably are a good idea. And there's certainly some question about what you've done to the security of the iPhone. Don't recommend it, but sometimes it's necessary. If there's things you want to do that Apple doesn't allow, you need to jailbreak it. So that's jailbreak. The thing that was most recently made legal, unlocking, applies to any cell phone. Because usually when you buy a cell phone from a company like Verizon or Sprint or AT&T and T-Mobile, it's locked down. It has the logo on the back for the company, and you can't just bring it to some other company. You have to unlock it. It's a better word to use probably is carrier locked. It's locked down to a carrier. Our listeners outside the U.S. are probably mocking us at this point because in most other places of the world, phones are routinely sold unlocked. But in the U.S., because of the subsidy, these phones tend to be very expensive. The company subsidizes it, Verizon or whoever subsidizes it by giving you, charging you only $200 for a $700 phone, and then you pay the rest over the 2-year period. So they lock you in because they say, you got to pay for this phone. Congress and has approved a bill that makes it legal to unlock your phone. And the president is expected to sign that. Of all the things, the pressing issues weighing on the plate of Congress, which is now on vacation, now on recess, that was one of the few things they did. Okay, good. So now you can unlock your... It's a good thing. People do it anyway, you know, whether it's legal or not. AT&T has offered this for a long time. If you're a customer in good standing and you've had the phone for 6 or more months, they'll unlock it for you. What's nice is if you have an AT&T phone and it's unlocked, now you can go to some other carrier. Or you can travel with it and you can buy a SIM card, one of these little identity chips, put it in the phone when you get to France or England or wherever, and now you have a phone that works in those countries with a local number. The third thing, rooting, is something you only do to an Android phone. And that gives you the ability to change that phone's firmware. Also a little risky, but in most cases kind of allowed. Certainly Android is designed to allow you root access, just as any computer operating system allows you to be an administrator or a root. We don't encourage you to operate that way, because if you have that kind of power, you know, you can do things that would be damaging to your phone, like erase everything on the phone, you know. So they don't ship them with root access enabled, but it's easy enough usually to root it, and usually harmless. The risk is in the actual process. You know, if you do something wrong, you can brick your phone. There's another term. We'll add to the glossary. That is, turn this fine $600, $700 device into a very attractive brick. You don't want to do that. So they're the terms. Unlocking is for all phones, carrier unlocking. Jailbreaking is for iPhones, and it lets you buy stuff from other than the Apple Store. By the way, you can do that with any Android phone. There's just a little checkbox in the setting. You can jailbreak an Android phone by going to settings and checking, allow third-party stores. And then rooting, which gives you the ability to take that phone and put something else on it. All right. I've done my explicatory duty of the day. 8888-ASK-LEO, the website techguylabs.com. Once you get there, you'll see lots of stuff. Information from previous shows, including audio and video. We like to post that after the show and give you a chance, if you missed it, to listen again. Plus, to comment on any answers if you have a better idea or you have a thought or a question. Go on in there, techguylabs.com. Also, a link there to the chat room, a lovely place full of intelligent, good, unusually good-looking people who are there to help you out or just to kibitz in the back of the class. Kim Schaffer on the phones, the phone ranger for the day, 8888-ASK-LEO. Give her a jingle. She'll prepare you, and we will talk high tech. There are other stories in the news. We'll talk about those. And I would love to know if anybody has an idea for what Apple can do with Beats. I'd love to know about that. Sell expensive headphones in the Apple Store? Besides that, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. We will talk about some new phones. In fact, I now have switched. I'm sorry, Kim. I got Kim to buy the HTC One. Then the new One came out. And now I've switched off of the One, even the new One, to this is the OnePlus One. It's another One. There's two Ones. Actually, there's more than two Ones. There's many Ones. This One is from... Are you confused?
I was wondering what that was.
I don't know what. There's a word one. People like that word. Microsoft had, they had their storage, their cloud storage solution, which used to be called SkyDrive. Then they got sued by Sky TV in Britain, so they changed it to OneDrive. And it's the Xbox One and the HTC One. And now this OnePlus One. It's kind of the opposite, isn't it? There are many ones. Anyway, this is my favorite one, but you can't get this one, so I'm hesitant to recommend it too much because there's in such short supply. The company OnePlus that makes this, these are, by the way, they're not sold by any carrier. You can't go to a Verizon store and get them. You can use it on any GSM carrier, that's AT&T or T-Mobile, but you have to get it by playing a contest or getting an invite from a friend. They're very hard to get, which makes them extra special. Made with unicorn tears. So I'll talk a little bit about those phones, too. Lots to talk about. 8888-ASK-LEO. What do you want to talk about? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. That is my number. We could talk about all kinds of high-tech stuff, including, how to brick, jailbreak, unlock, or root your phone. let's go to the phones. And Heather Hammond taking the day off, we think, for a special birthday. She's in Nolens. So Kim Schaffer's with us today. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. Who should I talk to first?
I think Pat in Corona wants to know how to extend his Wi-Fi signal out to a casino. And I think, I'd like to be able to extend my Wi-Fi signal out to the middle of the street, so why not?
Encino?
No, casita.
A casita. A casita. Hello, Pat. Leo Laporte. Wasn't sure if she said casino, Encino, a casita. Hi, Pat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Yeah, I don't have a casino, but...
there's a casino out back. So how far away is the casita?
Yeah, I have a casita that I'm renting, and I'm trying to get the Wi-Fi from the main house out to the casita, but that seems to be weak because the wireless router is toward the front of the house, and the casita is maybe about, 800 to 1,000 feet back from the main house.
Oh, that's a long way. 800 to 1,000 feet back.
Yeah.
So Wi-Fi typically goes about 150 feet, more or less. If it's line of sight, it can go farther. And 802.11n, the more recent, not yet ratified standard, 802.11ac, can go maybe 500 feet or 600 feet. But 800 feet, is it line of sight? Are there trees or anything? Or can you just see straight back to the casita?
You can see straight back.
It'd be a lot easier to string a wire. There's no way you can do that.
Just wire, okay.
Yeah, because the problem with Wi-Fi is you can buy boosters, and you'd have to have boosters on both ends, and there's limits to how much power you could put on a Wi-Fi signal because it's unregulated frequencies and all of that stuff. It just seems it's a quarter mile. It's a long way. I'll tell you, though, there are places that you can look at kind of extreme Wi-Fi antenna solutions. If you can wire it, I would. But if not, then there are some websites you can go to look at creating kind of Radio Labs is probably the best known and the best one, creating directional antennas that you can aim back there. It is good that you have line of sight. Remember that you'll need it on both sides. So what they'll do is they'll do directional in each direction. You can't just put it on one side, but this may be doable. This may be doable. I don't have much experience with 800 feet. I mean, I've seen, at hacker conventions, they've demonstrated miles. But even at that distance, even wired is going to be tough. Even wired is going to be tough. So I would go to radiolabs.com, look at their solutions there. They'll tell you how far you can go. You want one for both sides because you don't want to just transmit on each side. You want to receive as well. And I think 800, I guess you could do it. Probably cost you a couple hundred bucks. Radiolabs.com. Good luck. I need to get better glasses. There's a tiny, tiny print. It looks like Mackenzie in Grand Rapids. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Mackenzie.
How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I am doing great. I just wanted to tell you thank you. You spend my money well. I think Lenovo Carbon X1 for 2014.
Oh, isn't that a nice... That's a very... Did you get the Touch?
I did get the Touch. I went all out and got the i7 and maxed everything out that I could.
Well, you can't blame me for that.
No.
You decided to do that. But that is probably the nicest Windows 8.1 system out there.
The biggest drawback is a high-resolution screen. I run 3D software on there.
That's a drawback. It's too high a resolution.
Well, for modeling, and that it doesn't scale right, so I have to lower the resolution down significantly.
Oh, that's a bummer. Yeah, you know, that's something that operating systems should do better. And Apple's got this high DPI thing. They solved this because of the Retina displays on their laptops. And what they do, and I've been using this on a 4K display. You're right. If you use the native resolution on a high-resolution display, everything's teensy-weensy. Hard to read. I was having a hard time reading the teensy-weensy print on this phone. Well, the same thing on the computer. So the high DPI, what it allows you to do is double the size of everything by using a half resolution. However, when you are doing something like a photo or video, it'll do it in full resolution. It's really a clever solution. So your CAD drawings, are they expecting a certain resolution?
No, it's just the interface to the software. Some of the software I use, they already have it kind of set up where it will work with 8.1 and the high DPI screen.
Microsoft used to have a DPI setting, and they took that out in 8.1.
Yep. Some of the applications actually have it built in the interface where you can change it.
Yeah, that's what it should be. The apps need to be aware of it.
Otherwise, you can right-click on the icon and click Properties Compatible for Windows 8, and then disable high scaling or high DPI scaling.
Ah, that's a good idea.
Work on some of the applications. So ultimately, I had to just drop the resolution down. But other than that, beautiful computer, and I've absolutely loved it so far.
But I know you didn't call about that. What can I do for you?
Oh, no, that was just it. I just wanted to say I appreciate it.
You don't have a problem? I don't know how to handle this.
The only problem is I put my MacBook Pro down to use the Lenovo. So
wow. What software are you using for your 3D modeling?
I'm using several different ones. I use Autodesk 123 Design, which is fairly inexpensive if you're going to go with their Pro Edition, or free if you're just going to...
Right, they have the inexpensive. Yeah, they have the 123 Capture and all that. So you do this for a living? Is this a professional thing or is it a hobby?
Hobby right now, but I am going to be opening a 3D printing store in Grand Rapids.
So. Oh, that is awesome. That's the future, I tell you.
I know. I'm very excited.
Really cool. Well, very nice to meet you, and I'm glad you like the X1. That is a good choice. Lenovo's are really solid laptops. Really do a good job. And I would love to hear from somebody who has a global solution for scaling on these high-res screens. It's not some, you know, I mean, a 1080p screen, that's not so bad. But we're starting to see now ultra-high-def 4K screens, not just on desktop, but even on laptops. And even on phones. And, boy, when you have that many dots, you have like 500 dots per inch. It's crisp, but you need a way to double things and make text bigger and all of that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, coming up. Oh, I love having a caller who doesn't have a problem. I am not complaining. Believe you me, I am not complaining.
Oh, just wait.
Yeah, the problems are coming. More money, more problems. More computers, more problems. More technology, more problems. We'll get Scotty on here. Scottalicious. Gene, thank you. I appreciate that. Why is this a slow shutter? I guess I switched the mode. I saw you taking pictures. What are you up to there, young'un?
I'm just advertising you.
Thank you.
Like Heather does.
Heather does that too. It's so nice.
Yes.
Does she use screen grabs or she take pictures? I don't know.
She puts screen grabs on after the fact,
right,
I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
She's a little techie like that.
Smart scene, beauty mode, slow shutter, action, backlight, beach, candlelight, fireworks, flower, landscape, night, portrait, party, portrait, snow, sports, steady photo, sunset, theater, mono, sepia, negative, solarized, posterized, aqua, emboss. Emboss. Ooh. That's interesting. Wow. I don't really have much use for these, but sketch. Oh, let me take a picture of you. We'll sketch it. Make a sketch. That's not a very good sketch. I could do a better sketch. It's kind of a weird sketch. Sketchy. That's sketchy.
I like that painting you got last week.
Oh, did you see that?
I saw that.
Isn't that wild?
Crazy. Where'd it go?
We're going to hang it in the hall. It's right back here. We're going to hang it in the hall. That was wild, yeah. Neon. Ooh, I like neon. Neon. It's got live view, which is nice. You can kind of see what you're going to get. Let me just go back, though, to normal. How about normal? Thank you. De-de-de-de-de-de. It's Scott Wilkinson. Home theater geek.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Scotty.
Just wanted to let you know, I did get a Dell laptop for my calibration.
Oh, how's it? And you got a cheap one.
You know, Best Buy was having a sale, 15-inch with touchscreen, out the door, $400.
You got a cheap one, and you like it?
Yeah, and it works great.
Good. What's the processor in that?
An i3, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
It said, the software said dual core, so...
It was recommended dual core, and this is a fourth generation. I don't know if that's Haswell or what, but they called it a fourth
Haswell.
Generation.
That's Haswell. Yeah, that's
okay.
What you want.
So
that's what you want.
Indeed. So yeah, great deal at Best Buy, my friend Ray Coronado. SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room called me up and said, "Hey, Best Buy's I heard what you said on the show. Best Buy's having this sale. You should go down there." So I did. And I calibrated up my Vizio M series.
And it all worked?
Yeah, it worked great.
And it was snappy? Good.
Yep. Nice and snappy.
What do you want to talk about today?
Well, a couple things I have in mind, possibilities. One is you were mentioning Apple and Beats, and you probably know that Bose has decided now to sue Beats.
Yeah.
So we could talk about that. Or I just posted a very interesting news item.
Thank you, Michael.
In which some of the Hollywood heavy hitters like Quentin Tarantino and J.J. Abrams, Christopher Nolan, have lobbied the studios to promise to buy a certain amount of Kodak film stock in order to keep Kodak's last film.
Oh, I saw that
facility.
That's a great story. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So hang on. Here we go.
Okay.
Scott Wilkinson's here, our home theater guru. He joins us each week at this time to talk about home theater topics. I saw you with Joe Kane.
It was Joe Kane
week. On the Home Theater Geeks podcast this week.
Yep.
Really interesting. Joe's amazing.
He's an amazing guy.
And he did. If you want to get really into the nitty gritty of color spaces, this was a good show to watch. And we always talk about how the next generation films and the TVs and all this will have kind of two attributes that we're looking for. One is higher resolution, Ultra HD, the next big thing. The other, higher frame rates, instead of 24 or 30, 48 or 60 or more. But we don't talk about color space very often.
Which is another very important critical aspect of the evolution of the television system. And Joe is as expert at that as you can possibly get.
Yeah.
So, you know, the name of the show, Home Theater Geeks, podcast, was well served.
But I think color space, you can kind of understand what that is. It's the, you know, it's what colors at its root, what colors a screen can reproduce.
And it's not going to be everything that the eye can see. It never will be.
See, that's the interesting thing, because we talk about, well, that's a 24 million or whatever, 4 million color screen, 24 bits, 4 million colors. Isn't 4 million colors enough? Well, it turns out it's not.
No. For example, the current TV system, which uses a particular range of colors, cannot reproduce the color of Coca-Cola red.
Red is tough.
It's very tough.
I've noticed that. I don't wear red very often on camera because it will buzz, it'll vibrate. The TV tries to render it but can't.
Right, and it kind of tends to look a little more orange.
Yeah.
So the new TV system coming up, the UHD, Ultra HD television system, which isn't really implemented yet. We have TVs with that much resolution, with that many pixels, but there's very little content coming out, and Netflix is one, YouTube's got some, but they all still have the same range of colors that we're used to.
Right.
And so what we're hoping for, what we're expecting really in the future, is for that range of colors to expand. And the question is, to what should it expand?
Yeah, because you can't get them all, so you have to decide what
can't get them all, so you got to choose some.
Yeah.
And he made a very interesting point about how The most common proposal today is for something from the International Telecommunications Union, ITU, called Recommendation BT2020, which specifies three colors, red, green, and blue, that is much wide, encompasses a much broader range of colors than we currently have. But there's a problem with it, and that is that each of the colors, red, green, and blue, are what are called monochromatic. That is, they exist as single wavelengths. And there is no TV today capable of doing it. In fact, probably one of the only ways to do it is with lasers. And that's going to be expensive.
Wait a minute. Lasers in my TV?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
So right now the way most TVs work is they have liquid crystal shutters and there's lights behind them. The
white LED light,
and then the shutter chooses what color. Are you saying that instead of the LEDs, there'll be lasers, or are lasers going to fire directly into our eyes, or what?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I can't quite
visualize how lasers would be used in a flat panel TV. That seems to me to be a pretty tricky thing.
Well, I guess if you could have a laser per pixel. Because all laser is coherent light. If you could have a laser per pixel, you could have direct firing TV that would fire right to your retina.
You'd need three lasers
per pixel. Red, green, and blue.
A red, a green, and a blue. and in fact, you remember some years ago, Canon and Toshiba had a technology called SED.
Right. Silicon emitting diode or something like that.
Silicon electron emitting. I forget exactly what it was called, what it stood for, but it essentially had individual CRTs, cathode ray tube, per pixel. And it looked gorgeous, but there were some legal things that kept it from ever coming to market, so we never saw it. I saw it demoed a few times, and it was like, whoa, man, that was great. But we never saw it to market. I think the first application of lasers... it already has happened once. Mitsubishi had a laser illuminated rear projection TV some time ago called the Laser View.
That was laser illumination, though, right?
Correct. And you might be able to use something like that, but rear projection TVs are dead. They're gone. They are no more. So everybody wants flat panel. So I'm not quite sure how to do it in a flat panel. It's easy to do in a projector, in a front projector.
Right.
So if you have a dedicated home theater with a projector firing onto a screen, I can see that happening and getting that BT2020 color space. But there's another problem with it, which is human factors. Because the wavelengths of the red, green, and blue are so narrow, they're essentially just little lines, a problem with a funny name called metamerism comes into play.
We see this in black and white printing, black and white photo printing.
Exactly, which is people don't necessarily see the same color.
Right.
And it becomes more pronounced when the red, green, and blue primaries, as they're called, are very narrow bandwidth. So that you put up an orange based on these very narrow bandwidths, and one person will say, yeah, that looks kind of orange, and the other person will say, no, that looks kind of brown. But when you have wide bandwidth primaries, which is what we have today, everybody can agree much more on what color is being displayed. Yeah. So that's a problem that we need to think about as well.
Wow. According to Wikipedia, a laser color video display uses only two or more individually modulated optical laser rays of different colors to produce a combined spot that is scanned and projected. So it's like the old phosphor televisions where it would scan across the image plane using a mirror system.
That's a projection system. I don't see how they're going to put lasers into a flat panel TV, especially a really thin one, which everybody wants.
I want a TV with freaking lasers. I don't know why that's so hard to do.
Oh, they should have bolted lasers onto the sharks in Sharknado 2.
No, don't go there. So, so I see that the price of OLED TVs is dropping, and now LG is offering a 4K OLED.
Yep, they are.
For a mere $8,000.
For the 65-inch, I think?
For 65 inches. I paid $9 for my 55 2K.
Yeah.
Already obsolete. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Is it worth getting a 4K OLED TV? Do they look? I haven't even seen them.
Well, I haven't. Other than on a show floor like at CES, yeah. I haven't really too much either. I mean, one of the points Joe made, and I'll make it real quick, is that I've always said, no, don't get a 4K TV yet. Wait till these standards settle down. And he said, no, you can get it now. If we design the system right, it will still be able to feed the current TVs, and they will look as good as they possibly can. They won't show you everything that's in the new system, like the expanded color range, but it'll be good enough, and it won't be obsolete. And I was very heartened by that.
Yeah, I listened to the discussion of how we deliver. He says the delivery starts from the camera used in the motion picture all yep. the way to your television set, and how we can come up with standards that will deliver the best quality picture your set is capable of.
Correct.
Without leaving the old stuff behind. But you know what?
Yep.
There's many a slip twixt the color and the TV. Scott Wilkinson, AVSForum.com, and our Home Theater Geeks podcast. Great to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. Mike is on the line from Marengo Valley, California. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. My question is... First off, I'm a gamer, and I was forced to, when the new systems came out, I got an Xbox One, and I had to switch. I live in the country, so obviously I have very limited people I can go to get internet service. And
yeah, the Xbox One, in fact, they very insultingly, when they announced it, and this was a big black mark, I think the guy who said it got fired, said, well, it wouldn't be a good gaming machine for a nuclear submarine. Because you need to be online all the time. So having not bad internet access, I guess, would really make it not such a great gaming console.
Yeah. That's so anyway, what I did was I switched from one carrier that was charging me per gigabyte to one of those blue ones that has unlimited.
Yeah.
And when I got it, they advertised, you know, at best 1 to 2 Mbps per, you know, as the... download speed. Well, when I checked it out in the test period, I was getting like 0.35.
Yeah.
And which was about the same as my other one, which was fine because the only reason I really wanted it was not, I didn't expect to be able to game online. I just wanted to be able to handle the downloads for anybody that gets one of the new systems and in the situation, be prepared for huge 5-10 gigabyte just for updates and stuff.
That's right. All the time.
So I thought, you know, and I was tired of having to monitor my...
So your only choices out there are satellite carriers? Satellite ISPs?
Well, this one is not. This is another tower. Can I mention names or something?
Oh, yeah, always, always.
Okay, well, I had Verizon, and I got good signal strength, and everything was fine, but, you know, they charge you so much per gigabyte, and it's not cheap, as we all know.
No.
That have used it. And so I tried this Cyberonix, and they were unlimited. So I thought everything was, you know, that would be good, even if it was the same.
But the speed was slow, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not even close to being what they said it would be.
Yeah, it's wireless internet is tough to do well.
But I can't figure out why it won't do any better. I bought the $200 upgraded antenna. I can see the tower from my house, but it doesn't matter. I can completely unplug all the three antennas that I got. And
have you asked them? What do they say?
They don't tell me much.
That's because
they always say that the tower's down or something.
Yeah, I would guess that's because you're getting what they expect you to get.
Yeah.
Have we learned something here? ISPs lie. They oversell their speeds. Often they'll say things like up to a megabit a second. Well, what does that up to mean? Anything below a megabit? Right. Up to means if you're on a really good day with the wind at your back. So, Verizon, I was just reading an article that said, you know, Verizon charges, I think, $15 per gigabyte of down above, over and above whatever you paid for your, you know, monthly allotment. I was just reading, they charge about 10 times more than a French internet service provider. In Sweden, it's 63 cents a gigabyte. So why is it so expensive? Well, because they're a monopoly, effectively. We really only have a couple of big internet cell phone carriers in the country, AT&T and Verizon. And there's no competition, so they get to charge whatever they want. Verizon's moving people off the unlimited download to shared plans, which are very expensive. They do that in a variety of unusual and, I think, anti-competitive ways, and nobody's stopping them. So we overpay, and you're a victim of this. Now, you're also in a fairly remote area, I take it.
Well, it's not that bad. What I can't figure out is I can see the tower is only
I understand.
That I'm going off of.
But seeing the tower is only one part of it. How many people are using? Okay, so the way they do this, they have a backhaul to the tower, which offers a certain amount of data, probably what they're selling you, a megabit and a half or a megabit. And then if there's 100 people using it, well, good luck. So
that's what I assume is happening.
Yeah, of course. And they don't. You read it carefully. They don't promise you. This is the difference in consumer internet and commercial internet. Commercial internet, they have something called service level agreements in which they guarantee a certain minimum. That's not what they sell you as a consumer. What they sell you as a consumer is a maximum up to speeds up to. They might as well say speeds up to 1,000 gigawatts a second, because up to means anything below that. It's meaningless to say speeds up to, but that's how they sell it. So I really don't know what the answer is for you. It's not something you're doing wrong. I mean, I don't think there's anything magic you can do to fix this. This is what they are offering. You might try it in the middle of the night and see if it's better. You know, if at 2 a.m. it's better, it's because they have overburdened that tower. There's too many people using it in the day. It's a shame because, and this is why it's even more of a shame that the Xbox One and other modern console gaming systems require always on high speed internet. You're going to see more and more of that. A lot of the things you want to do with these things require fast internet, and they're really just suitable for people who live in metros. That's unfortunate. I don't know what the answer is. I do recommend a site called broadbandreports.com. This is a site, community site, where people talk about their experiences, upload their speeds, and it'll give you a better idea of what's available in your area. They actually have, you can enter in your zip code, and they'll give you a directory of all the internet service providers there. And then you can look at user reviews and get an idea of what they can offer. I'm sorry. I wish I had an answer for you. But it's not something wrong with you. It's something wrong with them. It's not you. It's them. It's like a bad girlfriend. It's not you. It's me. Except they try to make you think it's you. We are in a very broken system right now in our internet access. We've talked about that before. Tim in Chino Hills, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you doing today, Leo?
I'm well. How are you, Tim?
Hey, we're hanging in there, working hard.
Good. What are you doing?
Awesome.
You digging ditches?
No, I'm an electrician, and I'm hanging some industrial filtration units today.
That is hard work. I tip my hat to you.
We're having a good time. All right, so I'm a business owner, and I'm looking at, sort of carrying around my big laptop all the time. I was looking at one of these Microsoft Surface. Yeah. And I just wanted to kind of get your take on whether or not they're really worth the money, or should I just go ahead and stick it out with my laptop?
I should condition what I'm going to say here with the fact that I am not a big fan of Windows 8.1, or Windows 8 of any flavor. Windows 8.1 is better than Windows 8. But if you need a Windows machine, I think the Surface Pro 3s are very nice. The advantage they have, I mean, I like a laptop. In fact, I use an Acer S7 laptop, thin, light. Got a real keyboard, it's actually attached and all of that. But if you want a hybrid tablet laptop experience, the Surface is one of a number of convertibles that give you that capability. You snap the keyboard on, it's got a kickstand, it's like a laptop. It's very much like a laptop. Very nice touch screen, beautiful screen on the Surface Pro 3. In fact, I think DisplayMate just reviewed the screen. It says one of the best screens they've ever seen. So gorgeous screen. And the keyboard, not great, but okay. Very light, very portable. If you need Windows 8, I don't recommend it, but if you need it, I think it's a good choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. But I've always said, friends don't let friends drive Windows.
Shoot, a lady hung up that I really wanted you to take.
Oh, what did she want?
Well, she's going through a nasty divorce, and I guess her husband is getting into her email and
yeah,
all of her stuff.
Yeah, we get that one a lot.
Hard drive, and she wants to figure out how to keep him out.
I'm glad she hung up. That's a very
but she hung up.
Tough one to do.
Yeah, I figured it was.
Yeah. Mr. Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek.
Woo-hoo.
You take it away, Blue Jay. I'm going to get out of your way here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that very much. So, hey, everybody. Happy to see you all on a Saturday. It's funny, Leo and I ended up talking about something else on the segment, but if you haven't seen the news yet, it's kind of an interesting piece about Quentin Tarantino and some of the big Hollywood producers and directors getting with the studios because Kodak is in serious trouble. And if they go under, or at least if their final, their last film production facility goes under, there won't be any movie film anymore. And some of these directors really prefer to shoot on film. Now, distribution is another thing. We're not going to, you know, film distribution, movie distribution on film is pretty much dead. I mean, there still are a couple thousand theaters in the U.S. that show movies on film, and certainly also around the world. But even around the world, the number of digital theaters is far, far beyond movie film theaters anymore. But we're talking here about capturing the image on film versus on digital cameras. And that is a debate that is very much like the debate about whether or not you should record music on analog tape or digitally into Pro Tools or something like that. There are those who claim that film, that analog capture, which film is sort of an analog tape, has some quality to it that digital can't capture. And even though it gets converted to digital for distribution, as it does in music, certainly, except for LPs, and as it does for movies, except for those few theaters that still have film projectors, there's something about it that Quentin Tarantino, J.J. Abrams, Christopher Nolan, Judd Apatow, all prefer shooting or capturing the image on film. And I find this very interesting. So definitely check that out on AVS Forum. There's a good discussion coming that's happening on that as we speak. Argtar in the chat room, how does your new Vizio compare to plasma in terms of black level? It's not quite as good. It's pretty good. It's pretty good, but it's not quite as good. Certainly not as my Kuro, which is my reference. I didn't get a Panasonic VT or ZT60 when they were available. I probably should have. I can still get a Samsung F8500, which doesn't have a smidge higher black level apparently than the Panasonic's, but not much. So I might get one of those. But still, the Vizio is pretty good, just not as good. Mr. Mike asks, what new TV has the best black levels? OLED. Possibly the Sony X950B. The Sony TVs have LCD TVs have gotten black level down to an art by dimming the LEDs behind the screen very well. Even some of their edge lit TVs look really good in that regard. But I'd say OLED is probably the best in terms of black level. So that is the answer. Shivers asks, how do I go about finding a decent TV? the budget is about, I think, $1,500. Yeah, max size 50-inch for this room. Aimlessly browse websites? Or is there a better method? Well, don't aimlessly browse websites.
certainly come to avsforum.com and look there. That's a pretty overwhelming amount of information, and you get a lot of conflicting information there as well. So I would also recommend professional reviews. You know, I wouldn't go and judge a TV in the store because they are all way too bright and way too blue under terrible lighting conditions, not at all like what you'll have at home. So going to the store and evaluating TVs there is not a good way to go. So professional reviews, I think, is really, in my opinion, the best way to go, because professional reviewers know what to look for, know what's important, what's not, explain it all to you in their reviews. And the places that I go for TV reviews include soundandvision.com, CNET.com is also a good place. Consumer Reports. I was talking with Leo about Consumer Reports, and their TV reviews are actually quite good. So that's another good place to go. Another place I found not too long ago is called Artings, RTINGS.com. And that is surprisingly, a really nice place that I hadn't heard of before. Let me just make sure if that's in fact true. I'm going to go to RTINGS.com. And there it is. Yes, Find Your TV. I'm very impressed with these guys. They really do a great job. So that is another place I would definitely go to look for TV reviews that are trustworthy. And that's another piece of the puzzle, is you want your reviews to be trustworthy from people who you can trust will steer you in the right direction. My own philosophy, and certainly though that of David Katzmeyer at CNET and Tom Norton at Sound and Vision, and I think these guys at Artings as well, is you look at the TV, you put it through its paces, you say what you like about it, you say what you don't like about it, you say what features are useful and what features you think are not useful, although what features may be useful for me may not be useful for you, and vice versa. So there is a bit of that as well. Lawn Dog asks, what gigahertz is my new computer's i3 processor? I believe it's 1.8 gigahertz. So it wasn't quite 2. The software company, SpectraCal, that makes CalMan, the software that I'm running for calibrations, recommended 2 gigahertz dual core. But this is the i3 Haswell. I actually called them before I bought the computer and said, is 1.8 gigahertz okay? And they said, oh, yeah, sure, fine, absolutely, no problem. Hartley's asking, any good 3D movies out now? Gosh, I haven't been to the movies in a while. I hear Fire and Rescue, the new Planes movie from Disney, is good 3D. I thought Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was superb 3D. They didn't go overboard with it. It's what's called narrow 3D, so it's not really in your face. But it's really, really excellent. So
I was
a little disappointed
with the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's
I haven't seen that one.
Well, it's converted.
Ah,
I think it is, because it said conversion by, which sounds like they converted it.
Yeah,
which is weird. Why wouldn't you shoot that in?
Why wouldn't you shoot in 3D? Well, 3D. Because there are. It's a little harder to do that. It's easier to do in post-production, because you can then say, I like it this way. Nah, you didn't quite get it. Try it again. But if you're shooting in 3D and you miss something, then you have to go back and shoot the scene again.
It's very mild 3D. So,
right. Hey, thanks, Leo.
Not worth seeing. Thank you, Scott. See you later.
You bet.
Good movie, but don't worry about 3D, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website techguylabs.com, that's where we put links to all the stuff I mention, so you don't have to write anything down. You could just go and visit the website. All the shows are there, audio, video, hour by hour, day by day, question by question. Everything's there. TechGuyLabs.com. Now, I've completely screwed up my phone by I was trying to make the text bigger, Kim, and now I can't read anything.
Should I just read them off?
No. I'll figure it out. I must be getting old here. Maybe that's it. Does that happen overnight?
It might.
I think it does.
I feel like some things have happened to me overnight.
Let's go to Garden Grove, California. Don's next. Hi, Don. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes. Hello there. This is Don.
Hey, Don.
Hi, Don. Hi. Say, I have a friend of mine who lives in an assisted living complex, and he has a nice laptop, tablet PC, and we were trying to do some printing, but it turns out where he's located at, he would need a Wi-Fi router and so forth and a wireless printer to do this. And I was curious, does anybody ever make any kind of a interface for Bluetooth maybe?
What kind of there are Bluetooth printers actually. What kind of tablet does he have?
He's got a Samsung, I think it's a Tab 10 or something like that.
Yeah. So Android tablets, which that is, also have the capability to do something called Google Cloud Print, which is internet printing. They can print to any printer that's cloud print capable anywhere. Mm-hmm. So one thing to check is, does the assisted living facility have a printer anywhere?
I'm not sure.
He doesn't have internet access, though, I gather.
Well, there's Wi-Fi, but, you know, there's no way they can, you know, I've already
talked to him. Can he get on the Wi-Fi? Does he use the Wi-Fi for internet access?
Oh, yeah. Yes, he uses that. Uh-huh.
So, of course, they probably don't want to do this because it would involve expense. But if the center had a network-enabled printer, he could print to it. And if it were cloud print enabled, it'd make it very easy. But they probably don't want to, you know, hassle with that, which is too bad.
Yeah.
So there are a number of printers that can print via Bluetooth. They tend to be photo printers. What kind of stuff does he want to do?
Oh, just text.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
The Canon PIXMA is, in some cases, not all Bluetooth compatible. HP makes some Bluetooth-compatible printers, the office jets. He could have in his room, he could have a little inkjet printer that would be printable via Bluetooth. The issue is not the Bluetooth, though. The issue is the tablet.
Right.
The thing to understand about tablets, they're not like regular computers in the sense that you can just install drivers. You need to find a printer that will work with that tablet. And that's a little bit more challenging. The tablet has to have its own, have that capability of printing to that printer. You know what I'm saying?
Right, sure. Mm-hmm.
Let me see if the chat room has any experience with these Samsung. Which one is it?
Tab 10.
The Tab 10.
I believe
that was last year's tablet. Very nice. You know, I think a tablet's a good choice for a senior because they do everything they want to do. They can't get into too much trouble in terms of malware and that kind of thing. When the person who pretends to be from Microsoft calls and says, "We see you have malware in your computer. Can we please fix it?" and that kind of thing. So Epson, Dr. Mom's telling me Epson and Brother can print from Android tablets directly. That's what you're going to need to do is find a printer that will be both Bluetooth and print from that Samsung Tab.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what. I'll see if we can figure this out. I mean, Samsung makes printers. I wonder if they make a printer designed for their tablet.
Mm-hmm.
They also have something called Samsung Mobile Print. So, yeah, I think, yeah. So there's an app. Okay, here we go. There's an app you can put on your Samsung Tab. It's called Mobile Print. And it will then print mobily to anything you can connect, even a Bluetooth printer. So first put that app on there and then see what printers that it would work with. So it's called the Samsung Mobile Print app.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that basically what that does is it's a driver for wireless printers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what you need. And it looks like you can print from a broad variety of documents, including camera, Google Docs, web pages, that kind of thing. So that's, I presume it's web pages that he mostly wants to print.
Email sometimes.
Email, okay.
Yeah, you know, jokes. I mean, what else the old guy?
Of course. He wants to print those jokes out. Hey, as long as he doesn't forward them to me, I support that. Print them out. Do anything you want. Just don't send them to me.
I know. I live for that.
Oh, I was on quite a few of those mailing lists. Yeah, people very kindly. So Samsung can print to a variety of printers. The printer, because he doesn't control the Wi-Fi network, it's probably best not to get a Wi-Fi printer, although it might work, but I would think a Bluetooth would be a better choice for you. So. Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks. Hey. Oh, can I tap you for just a quick question?
Sure, Don. Sure.
I partitioned my hard drive on my desktop machine here, and I've got Windows 7, and then I got a middle partition there, which is I call data, and the last partition is Windows 8. And I'm trying to figure out how do you, what, for example, if my photos are right now, they're sitting on the Windows 7 part of that partition.
Yeah.
How do I get that to share the data drive so that the 7 can get its get files and everything from the data drive as well as the Windows 8 can use that same?
You can see the drive from both versions of Windows, right?
Yeah, right.
But you can't open the files because it says you don't own these files. Is that
well,
right?
I've never really got that far.
Okay. if you could see the directory, the folder, open it up, you're almost certainly going to get a warning saying, hey, these aren't your files. And that's because they're owned by the person logging in on whichever operating system created that folder. But you can, and if you Google it, you can find this step-by-step from Microsoft, take ownership of those files. Or better yet, make those files kind of not owned by anybody so that you can access them. It's a file permission issue.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to get that so it's owned by both Windows 7 and Windows 8 logins. And then it's a shared folder. There are other ways to do that, too. It's you can do that via network sharing. There's a variety of ways to do that. But I think the simplest thing would be just to have that folder be visible on both partitions, both the Windows 8 and Windows 7 partition. This would be a good one. I bet you there's some IT guys listening and say, well, not only, if you want to use SMB partitions, you can do that as well. And if you want to add that to our show notes, that'd be great. Just go to techilabs.com and look for the first question in hour two, and you can in the comments there. It'd be very helpful. Anytime you hear something and you go, oh, I know a way to do that. Or maybe you have a great long-distance Wi-Fi antenna for our caller last hour. Something like that. Just techguylabs.com. Don, great to talk to you. Thank you for being a tech support for our elders. That's always a great thing to do. They get so much out of it. I'm sure if you have an older parent or relative, if you've ever set them up with a tablet or a computer, it's really great because even if they're stuck in an assisted living facility, they can't get around much, that really opens the whole world to them. This is a great thing to do. And then you're going to have to do some tech support. But it's nice. It's a mitzvah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the number. They tell me that the Samsung printers work best with the Samsung tablets. That would make sense. More of your calls right after this. Yeah, I remember showing Regis the internet for the first time. ask Leo. That's the phone number. Tom is in Warren, Ohio, our next caller. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo. I missed you last month out in Petaluma.
Oh, you were here?
Yeah, I was there on the 16th. You and Lisa did the business update, and I got there about 5:30, watched Chad and Dick.
I'm sorry we missed you. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great trip. I had a wedding to go to out there.
We have an open studio, and we encourage people to come by anytime. And if you email tickets at twit.tv, that's the podcast site, we'll put a chair out for you. Make sure, but we'll also tell you if we're here. If we're not here, we'll let you know.
Yeah, I stopped in the next day also and watched Padre, and he was doing know-how, and that was a great thing to see.
We must be crazy. I never heard of a television or radio station just let people wander in off the street and sit there and watch a show.
That's great.
That's kooky. Great. That's kooky. What? Whose idea was that? Oh, it was mine. So what can I do for you?
Well, I spoke with you last time about getting another router, and we pretty much wired that out. I was just having some issues
What'd you end up getting for the router, just out of curiosity?
I didn't get anything yet, but I'm about to. I'm going to probably get that Acer one.
Yeah, yeah. Acer's done an interesting thing. They've decided to put, instead of writing their own firmware, all the router companies do this, and they usually do a terrible job. They've decided to put the open source firmware, DDWRT, on their routers. That way it's automatically kept up to date by all the...
Oh, man, that's a good idea.
It's a great idea. I know. I think that they're to be commended for that.
On my iPhone 5S, it doesn't seem like it wants to connect to my Wi-Fi, the router that I have now. The iPad connects fine, but the iPhone just doesn't want to hook up. It finds the links. I've got the 5 gigahertz. I've got the 2.4 gigahertz. It finds both of those, and it'll connect if I'm in downstairs to the 5 gigahertz, but if I go upstairs, it doesn't want to connect to anything. And it has been in the past, so I don't know if there's some. It might have some issues with my router. I don't know.
Incidentally, it's not Acer, but Asus. I always just confuse those two that does.
Yeah, Asus. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Asus, and that's the one you got, right?
Yeah, that's the one I'm going to go for.
Yeah, it's a really good idea. I'm not sure why it's now. Is it 802.11n or AC or
AC? AC. I think they all come with that AC, and then I don't know if they go all the way back to BG, N, and all that.
Well, that's the key. I mean, because I don't know if that iPhone does AC. You might want to look in there. And have you enabled both 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz?
Yes, I have them both coming off the router, yeah.
Okay. And, in fact, it sees it. It just doesn't...
It doesn't want to connect.
Doesn't hold the connection.
The settings panel, and it shows the network, and it just shows the little dial spinning.
It doesn't ever connect. And,
It does, but it seemed like it takes forever. So I went in and reset the network settings on the phone, and that didn't seem like it helped any.
Yeah. Is it better when you're right next to the router? Because sometimes if you're not getting 5 bars, the phone may not do as well.
That's what I think it is. I have an older house. It's a 1927 model.
Yeah. Yeah. Those. That's when they build houses well with often metal in the walls. They had, lath and plaster instead of drywall. Drywall passes Wi-Fi through without any problems. But if you've got any metals in the wall... if you have a plaster wall with a metal grid behind it, for instance, that actually acts like a Faraday cage.
I have the lath.
Yeah, the lath and plaster could very well be blocking that a little bit.
Yeah, I have an amped wireless.
But you would know, because if you stood next to the router with the iPhone, it would work fine.
Yeah, it seems like it's okay now. I've never had an issue with it on the second floor, but now on the second floor I'm getting issues with it, doesn't want to connect.
Yeah, that's why the weaker signal is not doing as well, and that's not unusual with mobile devices. And I have to say iOS has historically always had little finicky problems with Wi-Fi, and I'm not sure why. You know, you'll go to public networks, for instance, and they in some cases will block iOS, saying, well, we just have all sorts of trouble with it. You can't. It's hard to block iOS when everybody has iPhones and iPads, but it's just notorious for trouble. So I think because it works okay when you're next to the router but doesn't work as well on the second floor, it's just because the signal's not as good. It's your fault. You're holding it wrong. No. I guess you could get an extender, and I'm sure Asus makes them. Everybody else does. Get the extender by the same brand that the access point is. The extender you'll put midway between where you are and where you want to be. So somewhere that it gets a decent signal from the base station and can pass it along. I use that in my house. The bigger the house, the more you're going to want to do that. I have a couple of Apple routers spread out around the house. And then they all join together and form a single network. And you're closer to a base station that way. Sometimes they call them Wi-Fi extenders. Truthfully, you probably could just use another router and put it in bridge mode. It'll do the same thing, but an extender is going to be a little bit less expensive. Yeah, metal is the enemy of Wi-Fi. So any kind of metal, and most wireless signals will be hampered by them, and Wi-Fi particularly. The higher the frequency, the worse it is. So 5 gigahertz isn't going to work as well as 2.4 gigahertz, which isn't going to work as well as 700 megahertz. the long frequencies tend to go through metal better. In fact, that's why those are the, that's where the TV frequencies are, and the really good stuff's at the lower frequencies, and the open access, the unregulated frequencies at the higher frequencies, the microwave frequencies. David in Mission Viejo, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
Hey, I got a project I am having a problem with, and I see if you have a solution for me.
All righty.
I've got a program on iPad. I create a video with scrolling text. It's my work product. I'm trying to output this to a PC so I can share it with my clients.
Right.
And it's telling me it's HDCP protected.
Oh.
And it's not, because it's my creative content.
And you're doing it via AirPlay? How are you sharing it?
No, I've got a dongle with a HDMI connection to it, and plug it into the I had a StarTech HDMI capture card. I can't get it to record.
Isn't that weird? This HDCP, the idea is to keep people from pirating protected stuff, movies. But you made this movie, so it's not
right.
It's not protected. Where did you make it? Did you make it on the iPad? Did you make it on a computer?
I did. I'm using this cool app. It's called iTrial, and it's a video deposition, so it has the video.
Ah. Hang on. I got to take a break. Well, let's see if we can find a solution while we're in the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So we were talking with David in Mission Viejo. He has a video that he's created on the iPad, and are you a private investigator? This is for court use in court?
I'm a trial consultant, and it's a video deposition. So we have video, and we have the scrolling text.
I got it, and the text is a transcription. Fine. You know, I think the problem is not the video nor the iPad, but I bet you the converter that you're using to get the HDMI out of the iPad or something else along the chain is not HDCP compliant. And the device you're playing to expects HDCP compliance. So it has. This is the real problem with copy protection in general. It's just a pain in the behind. And HDCP, which is designed to prevent people from copying, making digital copies of copyrighted material, is set up in such a way that everything along the chain has to be HDCP compliant. Even the cable, the converter, the television set all have to support HDCP or it won't play. So what I'm guessing is that something downstream from your iPad doesn't know from HDMI, doesn't know from HDCP.
Okay. I'm thinking it's got to be the dongle, because the cables, everything else works, because I've used them before.
It's not that it doesn't work. It's that something, whether it's the TV or the display or whatever, is demanding that everything be compliant. And something, the iPad's not compliant, so that could be it. So it's not, so you see what I'm saying? It's the thing you're playing to or through that's causing the problem.
Okay, that's got to be the capture card thing. What about, I've got a VGA dongle. What if I can output the...
VGA will not have this problem because VGA doesn't have copy protection.
But how do I get the sound into Pinnacle? I can output through the headphone jack. But I don't know.
Have you considered AirPlay? This is how Apple wants you to do it. You're doing this. This is all kind of non-standard.
Oh, I've got AirPlay.
That would be the way I would do it. You AirPlay from the iPad to an Apple TV and then have that. Because Apple TV, guess what? HDCP compliant.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah. That's how Apple wants you to do it. Remember, Steve Jobs, the reason there's no Blu-ray on any Apple devices, Steve Jobs famously said, Blu-ray's a bag of hurt. What he was talking about is this copy protection. Apple doesn't want to have anything to do with it. So they'll AirPlay to an Apple TV. That has to do it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to play Hollywood movies. So the Apple TV is the HDCP compliant device.
Okay. Do you have a suggestion on which capture card I should use?
So you've got the video on the iPad, you're playing it into an Apple TV, and you want to capture it.
Right.
I think Pinnacle's very good. I've always used Pinnacle. We've also used a device. The problem with the devices I use, the ADVC converters from, I think they're from Grass Valley. They had FireWire out, and I think most of the PCs no longer have FireWire on them.
Right. I'm talking about the actual video capture.
No, I understand. So these were video converters. See, the problem is you've got digital, you got to convert it. You don't really have to convert it. You just have to capture it.
Right.
You have to capture it onto disk.
I can do that with Pinnacle. I can capture it.
Yeah, Pinnacle's great.
HDMI.
I think Pinnacle will be happy if you plug the Apple TV into it. Because the Pinnacle probably is HDCP. See, everything needs to be HDCP compliant.
Okay.
Once you get to the Apple TV, your chain will be compliant. The irony, of course, of all of this is it doesn't stop piracy at all. Isn't that cute? All you have to do is go to any BitTorrent site. You'll see every major Hollywood movie. So the only people gets in the way, as with all copy protection, the only people who are ever stymied, thwarted, disadvantaged, inconvenienced by copy protection are honest users. So you really, you have to think, is copy protection something you want to do, Hollywood? Because pirates just go around you. It's like putting up a big orange traffic cone in the middle of the street. Bad guys just drive right over it. Good guys stop. So you're basically treating your honest, God-fearing customers as thieves. And the thieves couldn't care less. And this is a perfect example. It just gets in people's way. It doesn't prevent piracy. Fred in Reading, Pennsylvania. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Fred.
Yes, Leo, I have a problem, I think. I had a monitor go bad. It came on, and then it blinked, and then it went out. So I just figured the monitor went bad. So I
Not necessarily, but go ahead.
Okay, then I took a TV and used that as my monitor, and everything seemed fine. But after I used that a while, the other night, I have a LX 8 cordless laser, and it seemed like when I turned the power into that, that one made the monitor blink, and now that monitor went bad.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now, I shouldn't laugh.
The LX 8 has XP on it, and I'm running a professional Windows 7.
Have you checked your cable, by the way? You know, monitors want a couple of things. They're simple. They're easy things, and they will go black, for instance, to save power if there's no signal. So if a cable's bad, the monitor goes, no. First thing to check. Second thing, make sure your refresh rates are properly set. So a monitor, the fact that the monitor blinked on at first and said, yeah, and then said no, could be either a bad cable or bad settings, bad refresh rates in the computer, whatever's driving the monitor. Now, the worst case scenario, and it worries me a little bit, when you turn on the printer that blew the monitor, could be bad power. So it would behoove you, it would behoove all of us to not run fragile, delicate electronics like computers, monitors, printers, televisions, stereo systems right to the wall. It is absolutely a much better idea to get, in fact, a lot of times, and you may think they're upselling you, but a lot of times when you buy a fancy TV or a fancy AV receiver, they'll try to sell you an AV power supply. It looks like, you know, an extender, you know, one of those power doohickeys that you have extra plugs on. But what's in there is surge suppression. Truth is, I'd rather have something that was even more expensive that would actually kind of purify the power. Think of it as a water filter for your power. You don't want spikes. You don't want brownouts. You want some consistency. Usually this thing will have a battery in it so that it can provide some consistent power if it should go down. It will have the more expensive ones are always on. The least less expensive ones are a failover system. That's not what you want. You're looking for something called power conditioning. And it may be, especially in an older house, that your power is causing stuff to fry. Every once in a while, somebody will call me and say, you know, I've had 5 computers and they die. Each one of them has died one after the other. And the only thing you can think of in that case like that, that must be the power. So don't be plugging it into the wall. Get a power conditioner. Triplight is a very good company. APC, also a very, very good company. Both of them make, you want a full-time power conditioner. All right. Either one of those. And I have to say, if you're plugging a TV, an AV receiver, anything, these are all very fragile because they're all basically computers now. They have chips in them. And these chips are sensitive in a way that a toaster is not to bad power. A toaster just heats up because you gave it electricity. So it can have too much, it can have too little, it won't cook, it won't toast as fast with too little. That could kill a chip. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's not exactly a UPS. It could be a UPS. You want power conditioning. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Wes in Piedmont, Virginia. Hi, Wes. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. It's an honor to talk to you.
Well, it's an honor to talk to you, sir. Thank you.
Well, I'm in the market for a new tablet, and I'd like to use it to beyond the staple activities like reading email and light web surfing. I'd like to be able to read music off of it, like sheet music saved as PDFs.
Yeah.
So I don't need something terribly high-end. So
you need an iPad, my friend. Just bite the bullet.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think there's anything less expensive than my tablet?
There is. There's lots of things less expensive, and you can read PDFs like crazy on any tablet. But if you really seriously, if you want to start dealing with sheet music, the iPad has so many apps that are specifically for musicians. So many musicians use iPads. For instance, very frequently on the concert stage now, you won't see sheet music. You'll see iPads.
Right, yeah. I've seen those in concert settings.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And there are programs that will do things like transcribe music. We'll actually write it down into sheet music for you. iPad is a musician's tool. And I know it's about twice as much. I mean, you get a Nexus 7 for $250. And, of course, if all you need is to read PDFs, not create them, right? Just download them and read them.
Right.
Yeah, anything will do that. And are you thinking for performance?
Okay. Yes, I'm a church musician.
Perfect. Yeah, and you can put it on the stand. If money is an issue, any tablet will do that. So the cheapest tablet you can find will read PDFs. But I have to say, the things that you can do with an iPad, what musicians do, and I understand iPads are the premium product. They start at $500 compared to half that for a Nexus 7. The other thing about an iPad, which is kind of cool, is it's 4x3, which, as it turns out, is perfect for sheet music. Most other tablets are 16x9. They're widescreen. They're really more designed for displaying movies and video. And so, you want your sheet music to be, kind of fill the screen. You want those notes as big as they can be. You don't want to waste space.
Right, definitely.
Yeah. So, it's about how much money you have, really. If you can't afford a $500 iPad. And by the way, you might look at the refurbished iPads on the Apple Store, and you don't need to get the latest, greatest iPad by any means. You can get the last generation or even an iPad third generation. It would work just fine for you. But there are before you decide, go look at the App Store for on iTunes and just look at all the musical notation software out there. It's just remarkable. And it's because so many musicians use iPads.
I sure will.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. You've heard me. I think if you've listened for any period of time, I'm not one of those people that just goes, buy a Mac or buy an iPad. I really try to tailor a recommendation to the needs of a person. And a lot of times I do recommend, frankly, something like the Nexus 7, which, by the way, you can't get right now. It's out of stock. But there are other good choices in the Android tablets that are very inexpensive. But this is one case where the software is so good on the Apple side that getting an iPad, you just will open a world for a musician, a world of stuff. Really amazing. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Squarespace. Hey, are you ready to start your own website? Or maybe you've got a website already, but you're not too happy with the service and support you're getting from your hosting company, you got to check out Squarespace. Squarespace is a hosting company. Yes, they host your site, but it's so much more. Squarespace tightly integrates the hosting with the software that's running on the site to make it very easy for you to create a state-of-the-art modern website. I mean, these guys are brilliant, and it's so brilliant you might not even know. You know, it's so well done. It's simple. But believe me, under the hood, this stuff is very sophisticated. Every Squarespace site, for instance, mobile responsive. It looks great on any size screen. You don't have a separate mobile site. It just looks great on a mobile device, on a giant screen. When you upload an image to your Squarespace website, they in behind the scenes automatically, they make 9 different thumbnails at all different sizes so they can deliver the right image to the right size screen. They do this all without you worrying about it. You don't have to know any fancy technology. It's all drag and drop, point and click. You can add your social media feeds, images, beautiful portfolios, e-commerce on every single template. At every single price level. Squarespace is really quite remarkable. And of course, if you have a question, if you want to know more, they have an incredible award-winning 24/7 customer service department right there in New York City. So you're getting help from the people who do the sites themselves. They also have wonderful webinars and videos so you can learn as you go. They take care of the hosting. They take care of the scaling. They even give you a free domain name if you register for a year. I want you to visit Squarespace and try it free. Click the Get Started button. You don't need a credit card. You got 2 weeks to do anything you want. Set up the templates. Import your existing content. They've got importers for all the blog APIs. And you can really get a sense of what Squarespace can do for you. All I ask when you decide to buy, use my name, Leo. You'll get 10% off your new account. Squarespace.com/Leo and use the offer code Leo for 10% off your brand new account. Starts as little as $8 a month, plus a free domain name when you subscribe for a year. Squarespace.com. Sandra on the line from San Diego. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. It started to rain briefly here.
Oh, I know. It's so weird. Here in California, we don't expect rain in the summer.
No, we don't. We need it. We're in such a horrible
drought. Terrible drought. And then I saw that water main that burst in Los Angeles. I thought, we need that. Get a bucket.
I know. 20 million gallons.
Oh.
Jeez.
I love San Diego, though. You live in one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's just
It is.
Great.
It's great. But, you know, you live just north of San Francisco, where I lived also, and I love that, too.
Of course. Of course.
But I have a tablet question,
yes.
too, actually.
Good.
I'm looking for 2 tablets, one for a friend of mine, both of us just for basic emailing, web browsing, videos like on YouTube, et cetera. And he's looking for something, preferably both of us, like 9 to 10-inch screens because we're kind of old. It doesn't have to be, but...
10 inches is actually the sweet spot for most tablets. They now make 7 and 8-inch tablets. There's quite a few of them. And they're just like big phones. I mean, the truth is they're making them in every size. So you can pick the size you want. The only thing I caution about with tablets, and you have really 3 choices for operating systems. You have Windows, you have Android, and you have Apple's iOS. And all 3 are fine. All 3 are good. My only suggestion is some of the Android tablets, you can buy them in gas stations. They're so cheap. They're $89. Don't. You could be penny wise and pound foolish. There, you may say, wow, I can get an $89 tablet. You will deeply regret it. So there are, especially in Android, only in Android, in fact, there are some really budget stuff that's not good. So expect to spend for a 10-inch tablet at least $250 to $300. Is that okay? Is that below? Is that above?
For his, neither one of us can afford an iPad.
Yeah.
His budget is probably around $300 or less if possible. He can probably go a little bit more, but his deal is he would kind of like a detachable keyboard.
Oh, now you want a keyboard for that price. You
know
that Microsoft sells their Surface Pro for $500. What they don't tell you is, you want a keyboard? That's another $100.
Yeah.
So adding a keyboard is going to add $100.
Okay.
So now your budget's really blown.
Okay.
That's a budget buster. You can get on any tablet, you can get a Bluetooth keyboard, whether you want to attach it or not. You can get a Bluetooth keyboard.
So on any tablet you can?
Almost any tablet will use a Bluetooth keyboard, yes. iPads, Androids, and even Windows will use Bluetooth keyboards. But a keyboard's going to be $100 unless you have one in the closet.
Right. But, okay, as long as they've got the tablet has Bluetooth.
And they all do.
Yep. Good to know.
Yep.
All right. So...
Does he care about... Do you care about operating system? Is that... It sounds like if you had the money, it sounds like you'd get an iPad, but you just don't want to spend that much money.
Oh, I absolutely would.
Yeah, okay. I think Android is going to be your best choice.
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
Now, can you recommend something good in the 300 or less?
Let me see what, you know, the Nexus 10, I wonder if it's still for sale. Yeah, it's a little pricey, though. 16 gigabyte, which is not a lot of memory, is $400 for the Nexus 10. That is a great tablet. It's a, unfortunately, both the Nexus 7 and 10 are currently out of stock at Google, which tells me they're about to do new ones. But you might find them on clearance somewhere at Best Buy has them. Some other ones have you know, refurbs, things like that. You might get down to 300. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What's the NVIDIA Shield cost? 300? Can't. Oh my God, the NVIDIA Shield is 300 bucks. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about technology. Computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, digital photography, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number, 888-827-5536. About half an hour, our travel guru, Johnny Jett, will get off a plane and join us and tell us how to use technology to travel better. But we can answer any kind of question. 888-888. Ask Leo. We'd love to hear from you. We were talking in the chat room. And, well, first of all, a couple of things. For Sandra, who wanted an iPad or something like it, a 10-inch tablet, for under or around $300. Of course, the iPad starts at $500 unless you go to the Apple Store and you go to the refurbished section. And I have found fourth-generation iPads for $300. 10 inches, only 16 gigs of storage. But nowadays, that's enough because you don't really, unless you're going to put movies on there, you generally don't load up an iPad with anything but applications. You stream the music. You might even stream the movies, put Netflix on there. And you don't need a lot of storage for content. Unless you're getting on an airplane, then, you know, even then, you'll have a few free gigs. You could put 5 or 6 movies, you know. But that's a good price, $300 for a fourth-generation iPad. I wouldn't get anything earlier than the third generation, but the third and fourth were very comparable and would be fine. You'll also, if you shop around, you'll find lots of tablets, even less than that. Galaxy Notes for tabs for $200 and $250 bucks. Shouldn't have too much trouble. As I said, get it from a big brand name, though. Samsung, Apple. Don't get some of the weirdos, the cheap, if it's really cheap, like the Pantex. Often they don't come with all the stuff you want. They're not reliable. So, it's, you know, don't go too cheap here. But boy, if you can get an iPad for $300, and you can, refurbished, I would. Now, when you get it from Apple refurbished, or when you get any refurbished technology from the company that made it, generally that stuff they sold, but was returned almost immediately. That they're not allowed to sell it as new. So it's generally just the same as new. They have the same warranties. It's just somebody opened it and had a buyer's remorse or decided to get something else, and you can't sell it once it's been opened. You can't sell it as new. They sell it as refurb. Don't get it from a third party. That's often a different story. Those really are used usually. If you get it from Apple, if you get it from Dell, get it from the company that made it, then generally that's a good deal. We were talking about market share. Here's a stunner. Net Applications is a company that every month comes out with numbers about how many people use different operating systems. And they do it in an interesting way. They actually look at information they glean from people visiting websites. So when you visit a website, your browser, your operating system, your computer, your tablet tells the website a number of things, including what operating system you're using. They've compiled these numbers, and bizarrely, for the first time I can ever remember, the current version of Windows actually has shrunk in market share. Windows 8.1, actually you combine Windows 8 and 8.1, dropped 0.06 percentage points. Their market share is 12.48% of the total market. Now, you might say, well, I mean, that's a tiny drop. That's not a bad thing. And it isn't, except that this is the current version of Windows. It's sold on every brand new computer. millions of computers are sold every month. It should be going up 20%, 10% every single month. Typically, Microsoft will say, we sold 20 million copies of Windows this month. It's always 20 million copies. So a shrinking market share, fewer people using Windows 8, is a very bad sign. I can't think of any time in history that any current Microsoft operating system has gone down. They should always be going up double digits. Windows XP went down, but you'd expect that. They're 25%. Wait a minute. Yes, they're double. Twice as many people use Windows XP worldwide as Windows 8. At least the number is shrinking. Now, just to put this in perspective, there's still people using Windows Vista, 3%. Linux, 1.68%, tiny, tiny market share. Apple, tiny market share, 4%. It's been 4% for 20 years. Windows 7 is the biggie. More than half of all computers on the net today are using Windows 7. That's probably the right thing. I can't think of any big computer company stumbling this badly. Windows 8 was just a terrible stumble for Microsoft. It cost their CEO his job, Steve Ballmer. He retired early. Cost them a lot of money and a considerable amount of brand loyalty, I think. It's really, really sad. And I don't recommend it. I really don't. When I buy a new computer, of course I'm buying it with Windows 8, and you probably should do the same because they're under the hood. There's lots of improvements. But, man, it's tough to use. It just really is. Randy on the line. He is calling from Bakersfield, California. Hi, Randy.
Hey, Leo. This is Randy. I'm the guy that sent you the cigars a while back.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I've got a mid 2012 iMac computer. Yeah. It's got the Intel i5 in it.
Yeah,
I'm having trouble with the Wi-Fi. It keeps going in and out. I took it over to AppleCare and they checked over the radio that's in it. They checked over they cleaned it while it was in there and all. And I've even contacted my cable company, Bright House, and they adjusted the ping and everything, but it's still going in and out.
So what's happening is you're losing internet access?
Yeah, exactly.
And when you say in and out, do you look at the menu bar and you see that you don't have any Wi-Fi?
No, it shows that I have Wi-Fi, but when I go into my settings and I go to the to my network, it shows that everything but the first two lights are off, which is telling me that it's not receiving the internet signal.
Well, it sounds like your router, not your Macintosh.
Well, I'm using the cable from the I'm using a router from the.
Yeah, cable. I understand. One thing to try, and this is very common, routers fail frequently. They're kind of a cheap consumer device that doesn't wear well. If you unplug and reset the router by taking the power out, wait 5 seconds, yes, put it back in, does that fix it?
No, it does not.
It does not.
It comes back on, yes, but within a matter of
it does fix
15,
it.
20 minutes.
Wait a minute. That does fix it. But then it goes out again in 15 minutes.
Then it goes out again.
Yeah, that's your router. That's not. I don't think that's your Mac. It could be your Mac. Absolutely could be, but it sure sounds like it's the router. If unplugging it, plugging it back in, now the Mac's online, it fixed it. Mm-hmm. It didn't fix it for long, I understand. Your router failed again in 15 minutes. It sounds like it's the router, not the Mac.
Okay.
Now, one other way to try this is to turn off Wi-Fi on your Mac and turn it back on. Now, if it's the Mac, that will often fix it. If it doesn't fix it, it may well be the router. It's hard to diagnose these, I understand. But generally speaking, resetting the router fixes it. That's not the computer, that's the router.
Okay. All righty.
Yeah, I'd call the router the cable company. Just say, hey, can I have a new one? They're renting you that anyway. you don't own that. Just say, don't even say, can I have? Say, I want a new one. And frequently, what will happen is you'll get a more modern one that'll give you better speeds, too. It's not unusual for routers to go bad. Really, what a router is a very cheap computer. That's all it is. And it's so cheap that they fail. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. Let's go to Mark in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. Here in the stats, I guess I'm not one of the only ones. I am an HP holdout. And I have a computer, a laptop that I bought for somebody like 3 years ago. It works fine. Everything's perfect. But I never went in and set my own administrator. I just went from when you turn it on and it has a little chest palm, says administrator.
Yeah.
Because I'm the only one that uses a computer.
Right.
Well, then I took your advice and decided to create a non-administrator user.
You know, I really should have been more clear that you should always create an administrator account first.
Right.
Yeah, I probably didn't make that clear, did I?
Well, it forced me to create an administrator.
Oh, good.
Account, which
okay.
I did.
Oh, good.
But then I lost my original administrator information. Lost all my favorites. I lost a little bit of.
So the trick is to not get rid of your old account, but create a new administrator account.
Right.
Log into the administrator account and then modify your old account to be a limited user or a standard user.
Okay.
Is that the steps you took? So no. What you don't want to do is now, it sounds like you're now logging in as your administrator.
I'm logging in as the administrator that I created,
yeah. So that's not what you want to do.
Right. Is there any way to get that?
What you want to do, no, you haven't lost it. If you look, if you go to in the administrator, you're logged in administrator, if you go look at the users and accounts, you should see your old account right there.
It's not there, though.
It's gone.
Yeah, I've just got the two that I created, and it says guest account is logged off. But the old one with the little chest palm...
is just gone.
Just gone.
Huh. Yeah, and you didn't delete it.
I did not delete it.
Yeah, it shouldn't be gone. I mean, I don't know why it would be gone. That's not what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So normally what you would do is exactly that. So you created... It's good. The Windows was smart enough to say, well, look, dude, if you're going to be a limited user, you better create an administrative account. You did.
Yeah.
It sounds like maybe the user account got damaged at some point somehow.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. So you were using the original account created...
Right.
Have you tried logging in safe mode? The chat room saying you might be able to see it, or it should still be available in safe mode. Have you tried that?
In safe mode, I'm not sure how.
Yeah,
how.
So you reboot the machine or turn off the machine, hold down the F8 key as you turn it on, and it'll give you a startup menu. One of them will be safe mode with networking. Choose that.
Sorry. Okay.
And that is a limited set of drivers, and... that's odd. I'm looking at what the chat room's suggesting to see if anybody's encountered this. This is not the normal behavior, but I think it might have something to do with what kind of account you were using up until you did this. So, just so people kind of are up to speed on all this, what we tell you is not really ideally. You shouldn't be using XP anymore. It's 13 years old, and the new version of Windows is better. And by the way, Microsoft is no longer offering security patches for XP. That was the big event that happened in April. So, but what we've said, and you obviously listened, is if you still have to use XP for a variety of reasons, don't use it as an administrative user. Whatever permissions you have when you're using the computer, the bad guys get too. So if you are day in, day out using it as a limited user, then they don't have the ability to install their malware, and you're much, much safer. Like 96% of all the attacks are disabled by that one step alone.
Right.
And so that's a really good thing for everybody on every computer. But something might have gone wrong with that HP in the sense that the account you were using, the default account, I'm wondering, try logging in the safe mode, dude. That's the first thing.
So just turn it off, and as I turn it off,
shut it down. Shut it down when you push the on button. Hold down F8, and it'll give you a menu of commands, and one of them will be safe mode. See if you can see your account there.
Thank you very much for your help. I'll give it a try.
Yeah, see if it works.
All right.
All right. Take care. Yeah. At that point, you'll see actually several accounts. You'll see the new one, the new administrator account you created. You'll probably see the original default administrator account. And maybe the issue, and the chat room seems to think this might, or somebody in the chat room seems to think this might be the case, is that original, if you were using the base administrator account as your day-in, day-out account, that may not be convertible to a standard or limited user. And in which case, you might be forced to set it back to administrator. And that seems like, I mean, that will at least get you back to the setup that you had. Now, all you've lost is your customized icons and all that stuff. So all your apps should still be there and all that. And it really is safer to use it that way. The other thing you should do if you're going to still use XP is don't use Internet Explorer anymore as your browser. The last version of Internet Explorer you could use on XP, I think that was 8. Not safe. Download and use Chrome. Google said we're going to keep that up to date at least for another year or two for XP users. Google Chrome will be a much safer browser for you to use. So if you but the key is not to use the administrator account, either a system administrator account or one you've created. Use a limited user account. I'm not sure what's going on. Some OEMs in that era, and I think HP was one of them, did a weird thing, a very bad thing, that when you first logged in, you weren't encouraged. What should happen when you get a new machine? You should be encouraged to create a limited user account that you use day in, day out. You say, okay, welcome to your brand new PC. Let's create an account for you. And I understand they don't want tech support calls, so maybe they're going to say, we'll make this an administrator account. You should then change it to a limited user. But they should create a brand new, fresh account for you. But remember, these companies don't want, the last thing they want is a tech support call. So in those bad old days, many companies, you turn on the computer, you just start using it. And unfortunately, that account may have been locked in as administrator. I think that this probably is the case with this one. So you may have some issues with it. You may actually lose some of the desktop icons and stuff. But I would encourage you just to create a limited user account, a new one, set it up the way you like it. It's not going to take you that long to get it to the way it was. All the apps are still there. All your documents should still be there. I do hope you didn't delete that account. If you go to safe mode and the user accounts, you see the administrator. You'll be able to log in as the administrator and check to see if the other accounts are there. Maybe they're just hidden, and in which case, as administrator, you can unhide them. There is an account called administrator, and then there's an account with administrator rights. Those are two different things. You do not ever want to use the account that was created by HP calls administrator. I think you were, because I think that's how they did it in those days. Terrible. Terrible. 8888, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The chat room is my best friend. If you had an administrator account and a limited user account on a brand new computer, that would be confusing to normal users. Yeah, that's probably how they think, but it's wrong. Here's our travel guru himself, Mr. Johnny Jett. Every week he joins us from some place all over the globe to talk about using technology to travel better. Hey, Johnny.
How are you?
I'm great. Now, I'm going to look carefully here. You're obviously not home because you've got a chandelier and a four-poster bed.
Right. I've not had that in my home.
And let's see, draperies. They look. You're in a hotel. I'm gonna guess. I don't know. I think it's a little too nondescript. You want to give us any hints?
I was gonna show out the window, but I don't have a great view. But I'm on a lake.
On a lake.
I'm in a famous baseball town.
Oh, you're in Cooperstown.
You got it.
Oh, I used to go to vacation. Are you at the Cooperstown Inn? Where are you staying?
No, I'm at the Otisaga.
Otisaga, that's the classy place.
Yeah, this is. This
oh,
is
what a great restaurant they have at the Otisaga too.
So I'm here with Talk Events, T-A-U-C-K. You know, these guys are based out of my home state of Connecticut, and they run these really high-end tours.
They do river cruises, too, don't they?
They do. They do river cruises. They do safaris. They do everything all around the world.
But I hear anyway, good things about them. Are you there for the Hall of Fame ceremony?
Well, they had a special event with Ken Burns.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Ken Burns did he did a talk to our group.
He did a documentary on baseball that was incredible. Phil Niekro, right. The old knuckleballer.
He just pitched against me. I just got a hit off of a Hall of Fame baseball player.
You got a hit off Phil Niekro?
I just posted it on Twitter.
His knuckleball didn't fool you?
Well, it did fool me, but I still got a hit somehow. I'm not going to tell him when he's 75.
The
guy is amazing.
Any way you can get
still
it.
Play. He must have threw 170 pitches today. The guy's amazing. And that's he gave a great talk yesterday. And there was also a woman named Lois Youngin, who was from the League of Their Own. You know, she was one of the All-American Girls League player in the movie League of Their Own.
Wait, but you got a hit with that batting stance?
What are you talking about? That's Lois, by the way, playing second base.
Oh, wow. What fun. And this is at the Cooperstown Hall of Fame field.
This is Double Day Field.
Double Day Field, yeah.
One of the oldest fields in America. 1920 it was built.
I love Cooperstown. I do. And Lake Otsego. And, oh, you're there. You're in one of my favorite places. We used to go there every year for a vacation. You like
what
it?
What a spot to go. Seriously, it's 3.5 hours outside of New York City. I flew into New York, by the way. And when I landed 2 nights ago, I was in a hurry to go see my dad for dinner. And I was going to take an Uber because I wanted to talk on my phone because usually I take the train.
Yeah.
And I go to request a Uber and it says, your account's been banned.
What?
And I'm like, what? How can I be banned? I'm always nice to
you're
all
Johnny
the
Jet. Don't they know who you are?
So I just wrote a whole story on it. So this is my first real problem with Uber. So I was depending on them. And
did they explain why you got banned?
It took a while. I didn't find out. I sent them a tweet and I sent them a message. But it turns out I lost a credit card a couple weeks ago, which was a big no-no. Yeah. And I canceled it right away when I found out. But I forgot to update my Uber account.
Okay.
Because I have a bunch of credit cards because I'm always trying to maximize my miles. And so the credit card that I lost was on my Uber account.
Yeah.
And it was working in Los Angeles for some reason, I guess because I had a large credit because I kept referring my friends. But when I changed locations and it asked me for a new credit card, it said, you know, I scanned my new credit card and it says all of a sudden it says your account's been banned. I'm like, what?
You know what? They shouldn't. The problem here is the word banned.
Exactly. That is my problem.
That's all. They should have said, hey, there's a problem with your credit card. You won't be able to use Uber until you give us a new one. But exactly. Banned sounds like you did something horrible.
I know. I was like, did some driver report me for something that I didn't do?
Yeah, that's just anyway. A language issue. They shouldn't use the word banned. That's all.
Exactly. It took 24 hours to figure it out. But my tip is if you are using Uber, make sure that your credit card is valid before you change. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to take a while to do it. So I got a travel app for you, by the way.
All right.
So a couple weeks ago, I was up in beautiful Alberta, Canada. I called in from there and you thought I was in Switzerland.
Banff.
That's right. I was Lake in Banff. But so I met with one of my colleagues. He's a professional photographer, Gary Arndt. He's won all kinds of awards. And so we're out there and we're taking a picture of the same sunset. And I take a picture of mine on my phone and all of a sudden I look at his and I was like, oh my God, how did you get that shot? My photo looks like, does not look good. And so he goes, oh, I use Pro HDR app.
Oh.
So it's $1.99. It's available on iOS and Android. And it's the best $1.99 you will spend if you like to take photos on your phone. Because seriously, and my wife quickly downloaded it, and she took a picture that I think could win an award. Because what this app does, it basically takes two photos and automatically aligns and blends the images. Mm-hmm. So whenever you try to take a picture of a sunset, you're usually not going to get the grass or the mountains or whatever. It's just going to get the sunset. So it's not great. But if you can get them both at the same time and you hold the camera perfectly still, and it will just – you will be amazed at these photos.
So I highly recommend
Pro HDR.
It's by iApps. I've been using it for years, actually. So you don't use it. I second the nomination, yeah.
Okay. I used
it on the iPhone. I didn't realize it was out for Android now, so I'm going to have to run over and get it.
Yep, $1.99. Yeah. That's a good deal.
It's not good. You don't want to do HDR when there's people moving around and stuff. It's really for landscape, stuff where nothing's moving.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Nice app. Good choice.
All right. And so the other app, by the way, that Gary uses is Adobe Photo Express.
Yes.
Adobe Photo Express. So this one's free, and it's available on iOS and Android. And what you can quickly make your pictures look better by either cropping them, fixing the red eye, flipping the photos, straightening them. So I highly recommend getting this one as well. And literally, he made this photo look so good in 2 minutes. And when I'm sitting there, I thought my photo was good, but it looked like nothing compared to his.
Yeah, that's so free, which is nice. You don't have to pay for that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I highly recommend those two.
Another one, I'll add a third one, as long as we're talking photographic apps for your iPhone or your Android. SnapStream, this is made by Google, was originally by a company called Nik, which charged for it. But when Google bought Nik, they started offering SnapStream for free. And, if you have SnapStream, Photoshop Express, and, Pro HDR, you really pretty much you can do amazing things with your camera. What phone do you you carry an iPhone?
My wife has an iPhone. Yeah. I have an iPad mini, but I carry my Windows phone mostly for the photos.
Great cameras on those Windows phones, I'll tell you. The best cameras out there.
I love the camera, but I don't love the interface. And I also use an Android, and this one's a Sony Xperia.
Which I don't love. No,
I don't love it.
Sony's supposed to have good cameras too in there.
The camera is nothing compared to this Windows camera. Yeah. I mean, this Windows. That's why I carry it around.
Snapseed.
Another camera.
SnapStream. SnapSeed.
Good to know.
Thank you.
I'm writing it down.
Jimmyola in the chat room correcting me. JohnnyJet.com, that's the website to go to check in with Johnny. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, I was just going to say there's some good deals out. I just sent a deals newsletter. There's a deal from New York on American and U.S. Airways to St. Lucia for 200-round trip.
Whoa.
And there was a bunch of other deals
in there. Just spend the weekend at that point. Just go for the weekend.
There was actually a ticket from L.A. to Kuwait last week for $400.
Is Kuwait a great vacation spot? It doesn't sound like it is.
But if you want to,
but you could walk to Dubai from there. So
I don't know if you want to walk, but you can definitely take a short hop.
If you don't mind the desert.
But if you want to see new countries, which all my friends want to do, it's a great way to.
How much to Kuwait?
I think it was $450. I got to look at my newsletter.
Round trip. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's why you want to go to JohnnyJet.com, subscribe to his free travel newsletter, follow him on Twitter and Instagram, too, and, of course, every week here on this show. Johnny, safe travels.
Thank you. Take care. You too.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, Pro HDR, good choice. I like that. It wasn't installed on here, so I just installed it. I didn't realize they had an Android version there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Ba-ba-do-ba-do-boo. Here's the gadget man, the Gizwiz himself, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and the Gizwiz. And he joins us each and every week to talk gadgets. And I have one for you and you have one for me.
I heard you.
Did you see me showing this off here?
Yeah, I love that idea.
So this is,
go
ahead.
I knew batteries, when they stopped working, had a little bit of power in them. Right. And years ago on the Gizwiz, I had this a dumb little monster thing, and you put dead batteries in him, and his eyes could blink for like a week.
Yeah.
So it was just a silly way to know you got every bit of juice out of the battery. But your idea is great.
Well, don't give me credit. Give it to Tom Witherspoon, Thomas Witherspoon. He's the founder and director of a nonprofit, an NGO, they call them, called Ears to Our World. They supply shortwave radios to impoverished people in third world countries around the world so that they can connect to the world. But this is the new thing that they're doing. This is called the Humanolite. Now, we've talked about this before because kerosene, which is widely used in the developing world for reading and places where there's no electricity, but it's very dangerous. The fumes are bad for your lungs. And so there are a number of nonprofits and charities trying to put together alternatives. Well, this is such a great idea. This is from etow.org. They call this the Humana Light, and exactly what it does. It is a simple circuit that gives back, they say. They use old batteries to create a flashlight that runs for weeks. These are on depleted batteries. And they're distributing these throughout the developing world where there is no electricity. And they're used for reading, for health, other needs after daylights. And since there are lots of used up batteries, and we don't know what to do with them because you have to recycle them and you shouldn't throw them away, this is a really great idea. So if you want to know more, etow.org. Now, did you bring your soldering iron, Dick? Because the kits that I got, let's see, there's a resistor.
wait a minute.
You're going to have to
I think my batteries are going back into my red-eyed, blinking
I'm sure they offer these assembled as well. Okay. Yeah, here's one that's assembled. I just opened the one that you would put together yourself.
Oh, okay.
But this is because LEDs are so efficient, aren't they?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Here's, I have a
You know, they had the problem with LED lights that dimmers, the old dimmers, could not shut them off.
Right.
Because they took so little electricity.
You couldn't go low enough.
You put it
enough.
All the way down to dim, it stayed lit.
Look at that. So there you go. This is the assembled kit, and there's an old depleted battery, and it'll says that it's flat. The light will work for weeks.
Yeah.
So that's mine. What do you got?
Okay, well, you know, I have a gadget that it turns out you have, too, because I mentioned it to some of that twit, and they said, wait, Leo was using one of these. It is, we're in the height of the barbecue season, especially. Yeah.
I love this.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. It is the, you want to invite the barbecue dragon to your event. And so this is a neat little guy. It's actually a fan with a rheostat on it, a big clip, a flame-resistant base, a gooseneck neck so that you can fold this guy over and aim it at the charcoals. And, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't realize you like the charcoals, and that's just the beginning. You have to stand there and wait. And wait and wait until they get down to, you know, glowing embers, which is ideal for cooking. So at the barbecue dragon, you can reduce it from like 15 minutes to like 5 minutes. Well, you actually did it on your barbecue.
I did. And by the way, you probably could accomplish the same thing with a hair dryer.
That's it. Yes, that's interesting.
Because it's really, that's kind of what it is, but it's a hair dryer with a big gooseneck on it.
Yes, exactly. So you don't have to hold it. Right. And
it works fast. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know what it's like, a blacksmith's bellows, you know, where they...
Oh, yeah, time when I was a child.
Whenever you're making horseshoes or
my mother would say, you want them to have dinner? Could you run out in the barn and make me a pot?
Exactly.
So I could cook in it.
Exactly. So it's just like that. And really, it just takes a little bit of air. And this is not heated. It's a blow dryer and a gooseneck lamp.
Exactly.
But it works on batteries, so you don't have to have a plug near your grill.
Exactly. And did you see the USB port on yours?
Yeah. What was that for?
The USB port is so that you can put in rechargeable batteries, and then you can run it from any of the outboard charges, or you can plug it into a cigarette lighter and charge it on the way driving to a picnic.
Yeah.
Or you can... Oh, there you go.
Yeah, here
you
can charge it from the video. It's on YouTube. YouTube.com/beforeyoubuy. If you search for Dragon, you'll find it. And I have a little video. The only problem with this is it blows the ashes all around like crazy. But boy, it does get the coals. They get really hot, really, really hot. It's kind of amazing.
I think you had, you know, it's $20 more than I think you thought.
It's expensive because, well, I quoted the pay too low payments of $29.
Oh, okay.
It's twice as much as I said it was because...
Yeah, except on Amazon. It is $59.95 on the company website, but it's $49.95 on Amazon, and it is Amazon Prime. If you happen to be a member, then it's free shipping.
And if you ever need to make horseshoes,
Yeah.
Your grill.
I'm making them now.
Your grill and the barbecue drag is all you need. You know, at $60, a little much, but I think 50, maybe not too much. I think that's a better price. Yeah. It is, or just use a blow dryer. I mean, it really is just like having a blow dryer, except you don't have to hold it.
Yeah.
The other thing they say, be careful. Don't put it over the flame because it'll actually melt. You want to blow air from a distance.
Well, I thought it was stainless.
I don't know. There's parts on it that would probably melt.
Oh, okay.
You definitely don't want to cook it. You'll find Dick at the at his website, gizwiz.biz, and more information about the barbecue dragon there, as well as a chance to play the what the heck is it contest. Close-up picture of a gadget. Not that. What is that? The Toast Tight.
Oh, Toast Tight. Oh, my word. Yes.
Toast spread. It was a panini maker.
Yeah, it's a panini maker from the late 40s that a company reactivated and are selling it again, and that's great.
But you put it over the stove.
Yeah, over the stove.
See, you go every time I go to Dick's site, there's something cool. Here is the gadget. He doesn't know what he ordered. It. Can't remember what it is. If you want to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, help Dick out, either with the right answer or the crazy wrong answer.
I must say one of your listeners did.
Oh,
they said,
they
figured out.
This is
what you're looking for.
Oh.
I mean, the ad was all in Japanese, so.
You still don't know what it is, but you,
I still don't know what it is.
You know where you got it.
I know where I got it, and I know it's still being sold.
Dick DiBartolo, gizwiz.biz. Stick around, the Giz Fizz coming up in just a moment. And I want to thank the folks at ETOW, Ears to Our World, Thomas Witherspoon, for sending along these light kits. I mean, it's good to have something you could do with used up batteries. And if you want to know more about their good works around the world to get shortwave radios to the most remote regions of the world so they can listen to the tech guy and say, what is he talking about? Go to ETOW.org, and I bet you they sell these Humana lights. It's probably a good fundraiser for them, as well as get them out to people in need so they don't have to use kerosene all around the world. I want to thank you, Kim Schaffer. I've been saying her name wrong for 2 years now. Finally got it right. Kim Schaffer for filling in for Heather Hammond. We'll see you again tomorrow. Nathan Staten, our musical director. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And have a great Geek Week. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.